Welcome to The Point on WCAI. I'm Steve Junker. It's Friday, March 20th, and this is our weekly news roundup. It's a different kind of week, as I'm sure everyone can appreciate. And one of the ways it's different for us at the radio station is many of us are working from home, attempting to maintain social distancing. And in fact, I'm working from home. I'm talking to you right now from my home office, the miracle of technology. If you hear any noises in the background, know that my kids, too, are not at school today. On the program, we'll be hearing from WCAI Sam Houghton, Jeanette Barnes, and Eve Zuckoff. We'll speak with Brian Dowd at the Martha's Vineyard Times, Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle, Casey Myers at the Provincetown Independent. We'll speak with Jack Spillane at the Standard Times, Josh Balling at the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror, Noah Asimo at the Vineyard Gazette, and we'll hear from Mike Dean up at the State House. This was the week that the first coronavirus cases were confirmed in our area. Even last Friday, we were reporting that public health officials said it was not a matter of if, but when. With us with the latest numbers and information as of this Friday morning is WCAI Sam Houghton. Good morning, Sam.
Hey, Steve. How's it going?
Sam, even in the last 24 hours, these numbers have been changing quickly.
Yes. Just looking at the state, we've had 72 as of yesterday. That's up to 328 in total. But here on the Cape, we've had a couple new ones. In Bourne, that's the scary one, a resident of Cape Cod Senior Residences was tested positive and has since been put in intensive care. They are actually quarantining that whole residence. We also have cases now in Falmouth, Harwich, and then there's the three old ones in Sandwich, and we also have a presumptive case on Martha's Vineyard. We don't know a whole lot about these cases, but we do know that at least towns are reporting that they have contacted anyone that's come in touch with those people and have been quarantined as well.
And a couple of cases in Bristol and Plymouth County as well.
Yeah, that's right. Six in Bristol and five in Plymouth counties.
Governor Baker has announced that he's activating the National Guard. What do we know about that?
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot at this point, but we could see about 2,000 members of the National Guard come in and help with, you know, anywhere that the state needs help.
Give us a broader overview right now of the response over this past week and how it seems to be rolling out.
Yeah, it's really different around the region. Testing is slowly ramping up. We've heard reports that it can be really difficult to get a test, even if you have symptoms, even if you came in contact with somebody. But there was some good news on this this morning. Baker says they're ramping up testing and hope to be able to get 3,500 people a day by next week. On the Cape, people can get tested, as you've heard, at Cape Cod Community College. The big thing, though, you got to get approval from your primary care physician first. And that's standard really around the whole region. We also reported this morning that on the Outer Cape, people can get tested at the Outer Cape Health Services. They have facilities in Wellfleet, Provincetown, and Harwich. Also, same there. You have to get approval first. And they're testing at both MV Hospital and Cottage Hospital on the islands, as well as at South Coast Hospitals.
Go ahead.
And I think kind of across the board, hospitals are creating these triage areas for patients that show signs of respiratory issues. And that's really to keep everyone safe, you know, patients and nurses, doctors as well.
What have we been hearing on Nantucket?
Yeah, there's a lot of anxiety. I think you'll hear more about that later in the show. But doctors there are saying they don't have the capacity to respond to a large outbreak with maybe summer residents coming there. I think the big message that doctors are saying is social distance. We've all heard it. There are likely a lot more cases out there that we just don't know of. And if too many people get sick at once, these hospitals will be overloaded. And I think on Nantucket, that's especially stress because you potentially have people coming from off the island and overloading their hospital.
WCAI, Sam Houghton. Sam, thanks for talking with us.
Thanks, Steve.
As the week got going, one of the big questions seemed to be, where could a person get tested for the coronavirus? One answer came with the announcement that Cape Cod would get a drive-through testing site. WCAI's Jeanette Barnes covered this and went out to see the site in action. She joins us now. Good morning, Jeanette.
Good morning, Steve.
Jeanette, this testing site is a collaboration between the county and Cape Cod Healthcare. Tell us what the site is like, where it is, and how it works.
Sure. So I was there on the first morning of the testing. It's on the campus of Cape Cod Community College. So you enter the campus road, and as you approach the parking lot where the test site is set up, there is a security check. As moving from the sort of campus road into the parking lot, you have to pass that security check. Then you're instructed to stay in your vehicle. You enter one of two lanes that have been created within the parking lot by a series of cones and sawhorses, and you move forward to the yellow nurse's tent. At that point, the nurses and technicians emerge from the tent. They're wearing what they called hazmat gear, which essentially involves a gown, a mask. They have some kind of an eye shield and gloves. So they approach the car. You stay in the car. They do the nasal swab. And then that swab eventually is frozen and sent to a laboratory. They're not actually conducting the testing there. They're collecting samples.
One of the things that they were stressing about this is that you need an appointment to head to the testing site.
Right. And so that appointment comes through the referral from a physician who has essentially certified that you have suspect symptoms that make you a candidate for testing.
It's interesting that they set up this site away from the Cape's two hospitals, and I guess it's central on the Cape, and it's just off the main highway, but it's definitely in its own area.
Right. Well, if the number of people getting tested does ramp up, that allows for an additional site, because they also have triage tents outside the hospitals.
Tell us what we know about the numbers of folks being tested at this site so far.
Well, we know that statewide about 3,100 people have been tested. But since the first day, we've had trouble getting details about how many people are actually being tested at the community college site. Initially, the organizations running the site, they told me that they were going to stop giving out that information to the media or the public because all of that was going to be coming centrally out of the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. When I checked actually with DPH yesterday, the spokeswoman for DPH said it's highly unlikely that the agency would have given that order or that directive because other hospitals are giving out their testing numbers and so forth. So it's a little unclear exactly where that communication happened. But a spokesman for Cape Cod Healthcare later told me that the Department of Public Health was giving out all the information on cases, and he had assumed that that would include testing. So it seems like maybe they will eventually return to giving out numbers about the testing if they confirm that they have permission to do that.
Briefly, we have about a minute here. You were on the South Coast too this week, and South Coast Hospitals Group, turns out they have an additional number of ventilators on hand just because of a kind of a quirk of how this happened.
Yeah, so that was an interesting thing that Keith Hovan, the CEO of the hospital group, mentioned. He says that this year they were doing an upgrade of all of their ventilators to a newer model, and they did not get rid of the old ones. I would think that was kind of early in the year when they were hearing about the outbreak, worldwide. And I don't know if it was a conscious decision or not. It sounded like maybe it was to hold on to those ventilators. So now he says, they have an ample number if they have large numbers of patients. And like a lot of other hospitals, they have canceled elective surgeries, which means that they have beds open that would be used for post-surgical patients to be devoted to this.
That is WCAI's Jeanette Barnes. Jeanette, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
With the closing of schools until at least April 6th and the shutting of sit-down service at bars and restaurants, and many people facing a period without work or income, food security has quickly become a big question. WCAI's Eve Zukoff looked at how some people are trying to serve up solutions. So many kids who were getting one or two meals a day at school before all of the schools shut down. Tell us about the programs that have stepped up now to help keep these kids getting fed.
Yeah, so Barnstable Public School System has been really light on its feet. They've kind of been out ahead on this. They started the week rolling out bagged breakfasts and lunches at four different schools across the district from 10 to 1. On Monday, they served just under 400 meals. By yesterday, that number was over 1,100. They also extended those hours at some of the locations. And today, they're hitting the road. They have five buses making 10 stops across the district. They're ready to serve 3,200 meals to any students, not just from Barnstable. And then in Sandwich, we're seeing kind of private partnerships happen here. The Marshland restaurants, three locations, have served a couple hundred free meals to students, though now the district is beginning to set up their own system. And there are also soup kitchens that are doing takeout meals and groceries with lots of protein. Faith and Family Kitchen in Hyannis is a really great example of that. So people are stepping up here.
I want to ask you about grocery stores. Just this morning, I think you were at Stop and Shop, where they've set up an exclusive like early morning window just for elderly and people who might have other issues going on, time for them to shop. Tell us about this, and what did you see and hear there?
Yeah, there were tons of people. I mean, it's 6 a.m. It's still dark out, but when I got there around 6:20, 6:30, it was incredibly busy. And I talked to people who were in there. It really depended on who they were. Some said there was everything I needed. One person even walked out with toilet paper, which was the first time I'd seen anyone buy toilet paper in a while. Other people said, you know, what they wanted wasn't there. But generally, there was a lot of gratitude, a lot of people in masks and gloves who said, you know, I would be afraid to grocery shop to get the things that I need if there wasn't this window where I didn't have to be around all of the crowds with all of the kids and everyone else who is maybe taking less precautions than this older group of shoppers.
Another group that you've reported on this week with a different kind of vulnerability is people recovering from alcohol and opioid addictions. How are those groups adapting to social distancing, and how's it going so far for them?
You know, so far, so good. I mean, technology has really been the way forward. So many companies, universities are using Zoom for audio and video conferences. That's what they're doing. And basically what I've heard from people is if you need a meeting, there is a meeting. But with social distancing, it's just going to be online. And for some, that's actually given way to feelings of greater community on the islands. And one person on Nantucket told me there's a big summer population that, you know, joins their meetings, and they've been joining the teleconferences. And so it's creating this wider sense of, oh, they're the people I know. They're here. I can talk to them. But someone else said, you know, I've been sober a really long time, and I'm a little worried about whether this is the first time in 80 years of these kinds of meetings that there hasn't been that in-person fellowship, that personal touch where someone can walk up to you and say, you know, you look a little down, can we talk? That's not there. And they're worried about how people early in their recovery are going to manage.
Briefly, we're just at the beginning of this. What questions remain about how this is going to work going forward?
Yeah, I think the big thing, and Barnstable County, again, they're beginning to solve this, but I think transportation equity is a huge question here. How do you actually get the food to people who need it, especially kids who don't necessarily have access to transportation because of, you know, either their parents are at work or they can't drive. And then there are services like food pantries, like the Vineyards Island Food Pantry. They've said, you know, we're low in volunteers. There are a lot of our typical volunteers, just like Meals on Wheels. The average age of the volunteers are, you know, people in their 70s. These are people that are saying, I think I need to stay home. I need to be mindful. So those numbers of those kinds of volunteers are dropping lower for some food pantries. So there's been a call for those with fresh legs to maybe step up and fill that need. A big question to come.
WCAI's Eve Zukoff. Thanks, Eve.
Thank you, Steve.
This is the News Roundup. I'm Steve Junker. We're going to the break now. When we come back, we'll hear from Brian Dowd at the Martha's Vineyard Times. There's more in a moment. This is the News Roundup on The Point. We are going around the region today talking about the impact of the coronavirus. I'm Steve Junker. Yesterday brought the announcement of the first suspected coronavirus case on Martha's Vineyard. Brian Dowd joins us now from the Martha's Vineyard Times. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Steve.
Brian, this news came out late in the day yesterday. Tell us what we know so far.
Yeah, so Tisbury's health agent, Maura Valley, announced that there was a suspected case of COVID-19 in Tisbury. She confirmed that it was a Tisbury property owner and that all close contacts and family members of that person had been notified, and they are all self-isolating. In addition to that, at a Chilmark Board of Selectmen meeting yesterday, when this was being announced, Edgartown's health agent, Matt Poole, also referenced the Tisbury case. And he told Chilmark Selectmen that he said it was pretty safe to say that there are several cases in the pipeline locally on the island, and that they're going to most likely surface as positives. And he referenced the Tisbury case and said, while it's not official yet, he's sure that it's absolutely a positive.
Mm. I want to talk about another story you've got in the paper. It's a nice piece looking at how one restaurant owner is trying to help his employees weather this challenging period in which they're not working.
Yeah, J.B. Blau, he owns quite a few restaurants here on the island, Copper Walk, Two Sharkies, Cantinas, and the MB Chowder Co., as well as the Loft. He is trying to work with his employees because he had to lay off about 75 of them, unfortunately. But he did that so that they could collect unemployment. He's also offering those employees free meals so they can come into his restaurants and get anything. And he's also taking out a loan, and he's going to be offering interest-free loans to those employees that need them as well. And he's pretty sure that some of his employees will be okay, the ones that are going to go home and live with their parents. But he said that, you know, he's got retirees who work for him. He's got people in their 30s and 50s who really depend on this income, and they're not going to get it.
One of the things pointed out in this article here is that this assistance package for small businesses that the state has put together may not be set up to support businesses like the island restaurants.
Yeah, so in the fine print of Governor Baker's small business assistance thing there, the fine print says that a business has to show it's been profitable since March 10th, which is unfortunately something no island business is able to show, you know, because we're so seasonal here. But JB, he reached out to Don Fernandez, our state rep, and who's looking into it to try and see if he can find a way for this assistance to reach the Cape in kind of a special circumstance, because, you know, obviously not been many on the Cape as well. Those businesses aren't going to be really making money in the winter months.
Just going to be a long, hard period, it looks like, for a lot of businesses like restaurants on the Cape.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately, today too, on Facebook, this just went up. JB announced that he will be closing his restaurants, all of them, as of 9 p.m. on Saturday. It was a really hard decision for him to make, but he said it's one he had to do. They were doing takeout sales for a while, and they tried that out, but he said it was one of the toughest decisions he had to make, but it was one he had to make.
Brian Dowd from the Martha's Vineyard Times. Brian, thanks for speaking with us.
Thanks, Steve.
The town of Harwich yesterday joined the list of those announcing a coronavirus case. Tim Wood from the Cape Cod Chronicle joins us for an update. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Steve.
Tim, not a lot of details here again, but not a big surprise, right?
No, everybody is pretty much expecting that there'll be similar announcements from just about every Cape town or every Cape town. And the announcement in Harwich was pretty sparse. The town just put out a news release that the first presumptive positive case of a Harwich resident had been identified. The person was obviously not identified. town officials said this person's contacts have been notified by the Visiting Nurse Association, and those people are following CDC self-quarantine guidelines. And the town, you know, they went ahead and issued the usual warnings that we're hearing and safety tips from the CDC and other health agencies. And, you know, both, you know, Harwich as well as Chatham-Orleans and most other towns have extensive information on their town websites for people who may be looking for something more authoritative than what they might find on social media.
Even earlier this week, when the first coronavirus case in Barnstable County was announced on Saturday, it was a man from Sandwich, but it had implications for Chatham, right?
Indeed. That same day, Chatham announced that they were the town was closing the community center because it was learned that this the Sandwich patient had been at the community center here on February 29th. Now, this was after the 14-day incubation period for the virus, but out of an abundance of caution, which is a phrase we're hearing quite often these days, the center was immediately closed and it was cleaned and disinfected. No one on the staff was symptomatic, and they were able to work in other town locations after that. Officials here said that the teachers who were involved in the class that that person attended were notified. And so far, no one associated with that has shown any symptoms that we know of. Chatham had already declared a state of emergency on Friday, sort of following the governor's lead, which they said was more or less a proactive step, since at the time and so far there have been no confirmed cases in Chatham. The town was doing that so that they could take other steps if they needed to. And one of those steps they did take, which was to open the town's emergency operations center, which is being staffed right now. And they are basically set up for to handle something, you know, whatever comes down the road. But basically right now they're handling calls from citizens with questions about the coronavirus.
Monomoy schools have opened up a curbside meal pickup. Is that right?
Yes, even as we speak, they began this morning at 9 o'clock delivering grab-and-go breakfast and lunches for students. They set up two sites for that. One is at the Monomoy Middle School here in Chatham. The other is the Monomoy High School in Harwich. And parents were advised that they could drive up to the proper entrance location and let the school officials there know how many kids they have, and they would provide the meals. So everybody is staying in their cars, and those meals are going to be provided 5 days a week into the you know, as long as this goes on. And as of Monday, the Monomoy and Nauset systems are going to start their distance learning programs. They've set up a system for students in all grades to be able to contact their teachers and get lessons. And this coming weekend, they've set up specific times in Monomoy for kids to, or parents actually, to drive up to the school and get a packet of information, and the Chromebooks that the kids use at school are going to be given to parents to bring home, as well as any locker contents that kids might need so that they can begin distance learning. I think they've kind of treated this past week as sort of like a week full of snow days. Kids have been mostly at home. I've been driving around town a little bit. I've seen virtually no children outside other than maybe taking walks and things like that. But that's pretty much the same with everybody. It's pretty quiet down here on the elbow of the Cape.
Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Steve. Stay safe.
Access to coronavirus testing is an issue on the Outer Cape. Casey Myers is at the Provincetown Independent and joins us now. Good morning, Casey.
Good morning. How are you?
Casey.
Strange times, huh?
And very strange times. I'm speaking to you from my home, actually, right now.
Same here.
Yes, I am working remotely, too. Casey, can folks get tested on the Outer Cape, or do they need to get a doctor's referral and head to Hyannis?
Actually, no. Outer Cape Health Services, which has clinics in Provincetown, Wellfleet, and Harwich, is testing people. You have to follow a protocol, which is sort of similar to what they're saying to do in the Mid-Cape, which is you call Outer Cape Health Services first. Many people are patients of Outer Cape anyway who live here year-round. And you go through a screening process with a nurse. If you display the symptoms that we're all very aware of now, fever, cough, shortness of breath, and if you've come into contact with somebody who may have had COVID-19, your screening will probably bump you up to a level where a doctor would then check in with the state, and then you would get a call back, and you would pick a time to meet in the parking lot, where somebody, a staff member from Outer Cape Health Service, will go out to your car and give you a test, a swab of your, a swab, and then they will send it to the Department of Health. Mm-hmm. And the staff members will come out in full protective gear. So it's quite different than what we're used to. Outer Cape Health Service staff are worried about the nationwide shortage of protective gear, including the N95 masks. But so far, as of last week anyway, there were only two tests that they had conducted. And I have not been able to talk to them more recently, so they must be very busy. They have not called me back in a few days.
Access to health care is always a bit of an issue, particularly on the Outer Cape. You talk to people about that and also about concerns over medical supplies.
Yes, medical supplies are a worry, the N95 masks in particular. And the tests have really caused a lot of anxiety, too, or the lack of tests. A Nauset High School group just returned from Rome in late February, a day or two before Italy became very, very well known as a huge hotspot. And Kimberly Mead Walters of Nauset Family Practices in Orleans said many of her patients were on that trip and really wanted to get tested so that they wouldn't be spreading the virus unknowingly. And of course, at that time, like now, there are just no tests available. They just were not allowed to have it. So that was really frustrating for people. And I don't know if any of the other newspapers have talked about this from the Vineyard or Nantucket too much, but here on the Outer Cape, Provincetown, Truro, Wellfleet, certainly we've seen a lot of second homeowners coming down, and they are isolating here, and the reasons why make sense, because of course, if you're living on a high-rise apartment in Manhattan or Boston, you're sharing mailrooms, you're sharing elevators, the public transportation. If you have a second home, this sounds like a really good idea to come here. And yet there's been some worry that there simply isn't the medical capabilities if lots of these people who are here now become sick, or if there's a lot of patients, this could be a real problem, because there's not exactly a lot of hospitals or medical facilities on the Cape. And we've seen the supply of toilet paper and meat, especially at the Provincetown Stop and Shop, be really, really low. So that's a little bit of a worry. And Wellfleet Marketplace, it has a limit of two of the same items per person. Mm-hmm. So last weekend I saw someone filling up two shopping carts in this small market, Wellfleet Marketplace, and they had sort of like two sweet potatoes and two onions, and and they were wearing gloves. It was quite a scene.
It's a scene, I think, that it's going to be familiar to all of us around the region. Casey Myers at the Provincetown Independent. Casey, thanks.
Thank you.
There are lessons to be learned from how Italy has been handling the coronavirus. Jack Spillane joins us from the Standard Times with the story of a former South Coast resident who now lives in Florence. Hi, Jack.
Hi, how are you today? This is incredibly... Hello?
Yeah.
Can you hear me, Steve?
I can hear you, Jack. Go ahead.
Yeah. This is an incredibly moving story of Christine DeMello, who used to be a freelancer at the Standard Times and has been living in Florence for 13 years, a successful author. And she just wrote us a heartbreaking story of the scene in Italy where people are so afraid, the numbers are so great. She talks of walking on the street and elderly people crossing the street to avoid her because they are afraid. to be seen. And she talks of her and her husband, who is a healthcare professional, difficult decision to stay in Italy, even when they knew the epidemic was coming.
She has descriptions of the streets and how quiet it is, too, and then also talking about what it is like for people to try to be coping with this there, where it's really at a heightened state.
It really is quite something else. And, of course, it resonates with us because we are all worried that we will become Italy. The numbers have just escalated so profoundly. She talks about deserted streets and the height of the tourist season where just literally nothing is going on. It really is almost like something out of Dante's Inferno.
She describes it as almost a post-apocalyptic sort of vision of the world that way, yeah.
And Florence isn't even one of the cities that is most hard hit. But it's just some of the passages where she talks about police basically hounding people to go back into their homes, to not be on the street. You can do some very basic things like walk your dog but even that has to be done very quickly. It's a very harrowing situation.
There was a moment when she was actually considering coming back to the States right as this was kind of getting going. Is that right?
Yes. Her parents, of course, were very concerned and asked her to come back. And her husband is a healthcare professional, and so he's involved in issues. And she just did not feel that she could not. But she wrote that she does not regret her decision. She is rallying with the people in Italy. And she does not feel uncomfortable. She said she does not fear for herself. She has a real equanimity about it.
That is Jack Spillane at the New Bedford Standard Times. Jack, thanks for joining us.
Very good.
Nantucket looks to be the last county in Massachusetts without a confirmed coronavirus case. I don't believe anybody expects that to last. Josh Balling is with us from the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. Josh, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Josh, the virus may not be declared just yet, but a lot going on there around this. Tell us what's happening.
There certainly is, and you're absolutely right. I guess we should say first and foremost that as of last night, there were still no confirmed cases reported on the island, but 24 people since early in the week have met the criteria for testing. Those tests, swabs have been sent up to the state lab, and only one has come back negative. The results from the other 23 have not yet been returned. So there's still a lot of uncertainty out there about that. And obviously, the threat of coronavirus has really permeated all facets of island life in the last week, as it has, you know, around the country and even around the world. Town officials and public health leaders are taking multiple steps to hope to ensure that the social distancing that public health officials are really recommending is the only way to hopefully keep healthcare providers and town services from being overwhelmed are undertaken. They're urging everyone who can to stay home, to avoid contact with others, obviously, and not to travel unnecessarily. That being said, boat and plane service to Nantucket, to and from Nantucket, is still running as scheduled, although Highline Cruises has limited ridership on its fast boats to about 50% to 70% capacity in an attempt to ensure social distancing. The Steamship Authority said they're not planning on doing that because their car ferries are large enough that they could cut capacity significantly, and there'd still be plenty of distance, so they don't need to do that.
Hey, Josh, let me ask you.
Yeah, sure.
I'm sorry. I want to ask you about what we've heard a lot about, which is this idea that there are a lot of summer people returning or people whose second homes are in the region. What's your sense of that?
Sure, I was just about to get to that. And there certainly have been plenty of reports in other media, and we started hearing this over the weekend about this massive influx of summer residents and maybe others looking to escape exposure to coronavirus by coming to Nantucket and to Martha's Vineyard as well. But from all the reporting we've done, and I've done a significant amount of it myself, we haven't really found any factual basis for that. While certainly there have been some summer residents, some seasonal residents who've been coming, the boat lines and the airport officials say that travel in the last week and a half or so is essentially flat compared to the same time last year, and that there are not dozens of private planes landing at Nantucket Memorial Airport in the last week. Again, certainly some seasonal residents have come. We've talked to contractors and caretakers who have been asked to open homes for some of them. They also say that they've been getting calls from some of their clients who say that they had thought about it, but given the current circumstances where they are and the fact that Governor Baker closed bars and restaurants and really put the state of emergency into effect on Sunday, they decided not to reach the island. So, again, certainly there are some summer residents coming, but not anywhere near the numbers that seem to have been reported in other places. The hospital CEO, as I was about to say, too, has reportedly said he is advising, you know, again, anyone not to really travel, not to travel here, not to travel off island. We have a small hospital. It's new, but it was never intended to provide the intensive care required of a massive viral outbreak. It just doesn't have the beds or the ventilators to handle dozens, if not hundreds, of patients.
And Josh, real briefly, you have a construction moratorium on the island. This is unusual.
We do, and as a matter of fact, we now have two emergency orders. On Wednesday night, the Select Board issued a construction moratorium on all construction projects in response to coronavirus. All projects have to be buttoned up, have to be secured by today, and they'll revisit that on a weekly basis. So the construction crews, a large number of whom come over on the High Line traditionally each week, that's not going to be happening, so the capacity in the boats is probably going to be going down a little bit there. And last night, the Board of Health also issued an order that personal services businesses like nail salons and hair salons and massage services have also all been closed by order of the health, the Board of Health, until at least April 6th, if not further. So it's another sector of the economy that's also been shut down in response to coronavirus.
Josh Balling at the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
The entrance to the emergency room at Martha's Vineyard Hospital has been set up as a tented triage area for people with respiratory symptoms. Noah Asimo joins us now from the Vineyard Gazette. Hi, Noah.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Noah, we talked earlier in the show about the first suspected case in Tisbury. You've got a nice article capturing how this experience right now, while it's forcing people to isolate, is also kind of bringing together the spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's definitely true. You know, even on an island that's used to shut down seasonally, this is something that's pretty unprecedented. And, you know, even though people have to be physically separate, there is a lot of community activism and people are coming together, especially to support the neediest members of the community on the island. we've seen, you know, just sort of as happens in a crisis, often you see people kind of step up to the plate and some really sort of remarkable things are happening. Island institutions like Island Grown Initiative are ramping up production in their greenhouses. Farm stands are giving out eggs, milk, cheese, meat, that kind of thing. Martha's Vineyard Community Services is sort of serving as the center and network to coordinate volunteers. Neighbors are pitching in to help others. People are doing grocery runs, and even a community Facebook group has popped up. There's a restaurant in Vineyard Haven that was giving away free soup this week as well. So in sort of just on a sort of broad community basis and even on a neighborhood one, people are kind of coming together in light of this.
Does it feel like people are out and about, or does it feel like people are pretty much bunkered down in their homes?
It seems like people are bunkered down. You know, ultimately, when you do have to leave and get on the roads, they seem fairly empty, especially, you know, even on an island that is generally kind of empty in March, they're feeling particularly empty this time of year. Grocery stores are, of course, busy, but most things seem to be in stock, and grocery store managers are telling people not to hoard. But other than that, it does seem really quiet and sort of particularly quiet for this time of year.
You have a quote from, I guess, Steve Bernier at Kronig's Market, saying that he's been doing retail for 57 years, and he says, I've never seen anything like this in terms of, I guess, people coming to the market and buying things.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly
somebody who's been through summers on Cape Cod.
Right, exactly. I mean, this is the thing. The island is used to there being a surge of people to come to the, or a surge of business to come to things like grocery stores, but it's happening in March. Mr. Bernier said that he's closed down his West Tisbury or the Up Island Kronig store just so he could deal with the demand and capacity that was necessary at the Vineyard Haven one. You know, I think right now everything is okay as far as supply chains and stock, but he's not sure what it's going to be like in the future. And people on the island don't know. And I think that there is anxiety and tension about how this is all going to play out, most definitely. But on the other hand, there is, there is sort of, people are trying to find a sense of normalcy and regain that within their home when they're trying to stay home. You know, there are some remarkable things happening. Like last Tuesday, musicians on the island did something called a social distancing, and it was just this beautiful thing that happened. And you know, one of the musicians was playing with their kid, and the other was taking song requests from the public that were showing up on a Facebook live feed. And you know, it's kind of people improvising in ways that, you know, the situation calls for and demands.
Noah Asmo at the Vineyard Gazette. Noah, thanks for that.
Thank you, Steve.
We heard a lot more than usual from Governor Baker this week as his administration has tried to slow the spread of coronavirus. Lawmakers, like many of us, are trying to work remotely when they can, readying various bills to deal with the crisis. WCAI's Catherine Ident talked with State House reporter Mike Dean about what's been happening physically and virtually on Beacon Hill.
Good morning, Mike.
Hey, how are you, Catherine?
I'm well. How are you? It's been quite an intense week.
It has.
So yeah. We started the week with this news that Governor Baker was going to, among other things, order all bars and restaurants to close sit-down service and only allow takeout. And, of course, there's been more updates since then. So kind of give us the recap.
You know, it's been a week of kind of an escalating crisis. I mean, that's the best way to put it. And it started out with that, you know, ban on gatherings of over 250 people. And there was concern about that affecting church services and large theaters, auditoriums, concerts, things like that. And that quickly evolved into a ban on gatherings of over 25 people. The governor has been giving these daily updates as numbers come out, not only the numbers of tests, but numbers of test kits that are being conducted, different businesses that are participating in the state's effort to test, changes at the federal level, all sorts of different details as they come through. The governor's kind of had a steady stream of things for the media to churn through.
Yeah, he has. I think one of the most recent updates is that he wants child care centers to close as of Monday. And he wants to do something with unemployment funds to help workers who are out of work. Talk about that.
Yeah, that's something that the legislature kind of got through really quickly this week. They're mostly working remotely. Only a handful of members of the House and Senate have been in the State House to pass these bills. Essentially, it would loosen up the unemployment insurance system that the state has right now and allow more people to get onto unemployment more quickly. It would do away with a one-week waiting period, and it would, you know, boost the eligibility to certain kinds of people who wouldn't normally be eligible for unemployment insurance. And that's just one of many different little, you know, programs that the administration is trying to focus on, not only workers but businesses, as this kind of unfolds.
Mm-hmm. And of course, all of these are important and can really help somebody who really needs those funds. But it does make me kind of wonder, you know, how does the state pay for all this? This wasn't in the budget. So I know we have a rainy day fund and that's looking good. Is that what we're going to see kind of get tapped into?
Yeah, what we first did was a $15 million was what initially was put aside when this first started. The legislature put the $15 million for public health precautions, things like that, and that's now being delivered to local boards of health across the state. The rainy day fund is something that, you know, is for emergencies. It's $3.5 billion right now in Massachusetts. There's talk of dipping into that for either, you know, bailouts for businesses or to support that unemployment insurance program that's now being stressed with all these new applicants. There are, you know, tenfold applications to the unemployment system as of this week. And but then others are warning, no, the rainy day funds are there for the recession that is almost inevitably going to happen after this. So to keep those funds in reserve. So this is something, you know, a practical problem that Beacon Hill is going to have to deal with.
You know, I heard a story, I can't help but ask you this, Mike, that a state rep would like to temporarily relax liquor laws, and we have some pretty strict laws here in Massachusetts, to allow restaurants that were closed to sit-down service this week to include alcohol sales if folks buy the food. Is there any chance this would ever happen in Massachusetts?
It's a provocative idea, I'll put it that way, but it's something that, you know, there's going to be a lot of different ideas thrown about how to help out the restaurant industry. You know, as we know, a lot of liquor sales are the engine of a lot of how these places do business, and the liquor licenses are an advantage that, you know, local restaurants have over other takeout businesses. So this is kind of seen as potentially a legitimate way to boost sales, so at least some restaurants can scrape through. I don't know how that works. I haven't looked at the bill too closely to tell you how takeout liquor would actually operate. I know that, though, a lot of breweries, especially around here in Boston, and I imagine elsewhere in the state, are doing a lot of takeout. If they have canning operations, they're switching over to that kind of thing, so it's more of a retail sale operation. And people are going to their liquor stores probably more frequently than otherwise. So I think this idea is, well, if you had to shut down your restaurant, could you still sell beer and wine with those takeout orders? And that's, like I said, one of a lot of ideas people are going through right now over how to help out this industry that's going to be completely reshaped by this crisis.
Yeah, it really is. Last week, the president announced public-private partnerships to deal with a number of issues on the national level. And this week, the governor announced some state-private partnerships.
Yeah, this is something that's been happening behind the scenes, and we're now hearing more and more about it. So they're trying to get the private medical apparatus that Massachusetts has in abundance, in a lot of our research laboratories, universities, private companies, things like that, biosciences, turned on to testing for the coronavirus. So there have been some changes at the federal level that kind of loosened up restrictions that now allow more private labs to get involved here. So Mary Lou Sutter's the Health and Human Services Secretary. She's been working with these companies to, A, acquire more test kits and give them to these different places, particularly the Broad Institute, which is a joint MIT-Harvard biomedical research center, to use their technologies, their expansive lab resources to greatly increase the number of testing for COVID-19 that we're doing. Sutter says that with this help from the Broad Institute, we could get up to about 1,000 tests per day, which is the goal they've set right now. The state lab itself can only manage about 400 a day.
And Baker's also announced relaxing or new rules to make telemedicine easier as well.
Yeah, this is kind of something that has been around Beacon Hill and being debated for years and years. It's an idea to basically allow telemedicine across state lines. That's something that technically isn't legal in Massachusetts right now. Baker used his emergency powers to flip the switch on that, which is something that Beacon Hill lawmakers haven't been able to do under normal circumstances for about a decade.
What about House and Senate lawmakers? Are they still coming to the State House, or are they trying to work remotely?
Yeah, the building is shut down to the public. There's a handful of members for the House and the Senate who are kind of milling around. They have informal sessions that don't require a quorum, but they still need to have a few people, a few Democrats, at least one Republican in the chamber in order to pass legislation. So, as the governor comes up with kind of new emergency changes he'd like to see made, for instance, that unemployment insurance was a change in the law that Baker wanted to see happen. The legislature pushed it through fairly rapidly. There's a few staffers around to kind of man those sessions. The press is still there because the governor has been holding daily press conferences from the State House on this crisis. But for the most part, it's dead. Everyone's kind of working from home, obviously, and working on constituent services and things like that.
Right. So they're still working. They're just not working in person. Okay, just finally, Mike, we have a special election set for the end of the month for seats on Beacon Hill, including a state Senate seat representing parts of the Upper Cape. Do you know if Secretary of State Bill Gavin plans to postpone it? We've been hearing here on the Cape that town clerks are asking for that to happen.
That's something that could only change because of the legislative action or a court order. Galvin himself has no authority to delay or suspend an election, even a special election. So that is still on for March 31st. All the special elections, there's a handful of them. The legislature could put a stay in place and reschedule them since they set those dates anyway, or a court could get involved and delay them that way. But Galvin's office is working with town clerks and really trying to get as much flexibility for voting in these specials as they can. They're talking about consolidating polling locations or really opening up absentee voting. So if you have health concerns, that is a valid reason to use absentee voting. So he's trying to encourage people to get into their town halls, talk to the clerks, maybe get an absentee ballot and to get that in as soon as they can. So at least, depending on what the situation is on March 31st, on this special election day, votes can be counted and already in.
And that is State House reporter Mike Dean talking to us from Boston. Mike, thanks so much for all your reporting.
Thank you.
And that's WCAI's Catherine Iden speaking with Mike Dean there. That's our show for today. I want to thank my guests. We spoke with WCAI Sam Houghton, Jeanette Barnes, and Eve Zuckoff. We talked to Brian Dowd at the Martha's Vineyard Times, Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle, Casey Myers at the Provincetown Independent, Jack Spillane at the Standard Times. We heard from Josh Balling at the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror, Noah Asmo at the Vineyard Gazette, and big thanks to Dan Tridle back at the studio, and an even bigger thanks to my family for tiptoeing around in the background. From my home office in Woods Hole, I'm Steve Junker. Thank you for listening.